Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, with Alameda's Lincoln Middle School Band's rendition of Stars and Stripes Forever at the July 4th Parade. Today, in keeping with our July 4th celebration, we'll review what patriotism is and what it is not, according to Dr. Michael Parenti. This show was actually recorded when President Bush was in office, and we'll hear a couple of references to Bush, but I'm airing it as Parenti's views on patriotism are as appropriate to our country today as they were during the last administration, and actually the administration before that, too. Before we turn to Parenti, a shout-out to New York area Peace Grandmothers, who held a unique holiday event, the third annual reading of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence. This celebration took place in beautiful Strawberry Fields in Central Park. It's Yoko Ono's oasis dedicated to the memory of her husband, John Lennon. And the celebration, this reading, is believed to be unique in the United States. More of the 100 people attending read various constitutional amendments, and civil liberties and constitutional scholar Norm Siegel led the ceremonies and commented on how some of the amendments were being subverted today. He also gave interesting background information on the creation of the documents. For instance, he pointed out how Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution specifies that only Congress shall declare war, and yet since the end of World War II, we've been involved in too many wars not declared by that body in too many places we shouldn't have been in and we shouldn't be in now. He also explained that the First Amendment, which guarantees the right of citizens to peaceably assemble, has been abused right in Central Park, where it is now forbidden to gather in large groups to peacefully protest. He urged the attendees to fight to, quote, take back our park, and he remarked, the constitutional system, we should try it sometimes. If we follow the Constitution, many of our civil rights and civil liberties problems would be substantially reduced. Civil rights and civil liberties problems are escalating in Ramle, Israel, where a group of activists were arrested on the high seas by the Israeli Navy are being held in prison. Host of WBI in Exile, Don DeBar, established contact with the Gaza 21 in the Ramle prison, and here is what three of them had to say.
This is Maria McGuire. I am the Irish Nobel Peace Laureate from Northern Ireland. I'm here with Congressman Cynthia McKinney and the human rights activists from around the world. We sailed on the 21st of June from Cyprus to take some toys to Gaza, and we were hijacked by the Israeli Navy on our ship in Gazan waters and by gunpoint taken to Israel, where we were arrested and have spent the last two nights here in Israeli detention and Israeli jail. We will now be deported, and all we were doing was taking toys and medicine to the people of Gaza. This proves that Gaza is indeed an occupied territory, because Israeli policy occupation and collective punishment of 1.5 million people of Gaza. They've cut them off from the entire world. They've cut off their sea routes, blockaded the entire sea route. They've cut off the borders. They bombed their airport. So for over 2 years, they have been adopting a policy of collective punishment of the people of Gaza. This is against the Geneva Conventions and international laws and all human rights. And we came to stand for human rights, for international laws to be upheld. We hope that President Obama will insist that the Israeli government uphold human rights, international laws, and the UN resolutions, because the people of Gaza and Palestine are suffering terrible under very severe and punitive restrictions.
This is Catherine Sheep speaking from a cell block in Israel. We're here as part of the what we call Free Gaza 21, 21 global citizens who are on a boat and kidnapped out of, as we entered Gazan waters. The Israeli government knew we were coming. We informed that we were unarmed citizens. We had nothing but aid for the Palestinians. And out of this experience, we're able to see how desperately the Palestinians must feel this constant structural and military violence that they've experienced over the last 40, 60 years. And this is just a small taste for us, but we do hope that people start to stand in solidarity with the Palestinians and correct this huge human rights violation imposed upon them by the Israeli government.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and I'm calling from an Israeli prison cell block. The Free Gaza 21, who are human rights activists trying to take medical supplies, building supplies, and mostly crayons for children. I had a suitcase full of crayons for children to Gaza. And while we were on our way to Gaza, the Israelis threatened to fire on our boat. We did not turn around. Because we didn't turn around, the Israelis hijacked us because we wanted to give crayons to the children of Gaza. While we've been here, we have heard stories. We're in the women's section, and I have met women from Eritrea, Ethiopia, Sudan, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, Niger, and all of these women say the same thing, that they arrived here in a very difficult way. They came here through the United Nations. They have paperwork from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. But when they arrived in Israel, they were taken by the police because Israel says to them, there is no UN in Israel. And what they all say is that we as foreigners have no rights. It's clear that the children of Palestine also don't have any rights. Something as simple as crayons for children. We have not committed any crime. We have been detained, and we want the people, really, of the world to see how we have been treated just because we wanted to deliver humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. It is incumbent upon President Obama to stand by his reported policy of easing the Gazan blockade and of allowing building supplies, medical supplies, and school supplies to go through. We call upon President Obama to use the highest levels of his authority to transmit this message to the Israelis. Let the Free Gaza 21 go, but also help the Palestinian people and the children of Gaza to assert and enjoy their natural human rights.
That was Mairead McGuire, 1977 Nobel Peace Prize winner for her work in Northern Ireland, Catherine Sheets and Cynthia McKinney, former U.S. representative from inside the prison at Ramleh in Israel. In his daily press briefing, U.S. Department of State spokesman Ian Kelly said they knew of the situation and were looking for consular access to the Americans in the prison. Other than that, the State Department had no comment, and they're leaving it to the Israelis to keep them updated. Now let's turn to an excerpt from Radio Free Santa Cruz's Rocking the Boat. Its host is Van V-Man, and the interview is with Dr. Michael Parenti. Asked for his definition of patriotism, Michael Parenti responded.
By my view of patriotism, I think a real patriot is someone who feels a love and attachment for all the peoples of the world. He's a patriot of humanity. He can also be an American patriot in the sense that he's proud of some parts of his heritage, of the courageous struggles of many people to advance the quality and justice and democracy in their lives. He can also be a patriot while being less than proud, but fully informed of other aspects of his nation's history and how its rich and powerful rulers have often abused immigrant peoples, Native American peoples, how they've abused the environment, how they've pursued ruthlessly self-interest with no regard for their country. So I would ask you, who's a better patriot? You who are concerned about the quality of our environment, our air, our drinking water, or President Bush, who is undermining these things and right now sending out executive orders that are designed to undermine and eliminate pollution controls. If you love your country, you want it to be clean and livable in. Who's more of a patriot? You, who wants to see the public treasure spent on decent public education and decent health care for everyone, or President Bush, who wants to roll back and cut back and subvert these things and spend money on missiles and depleted uranium bombs and the like? How does that make him a better patriot than I, you see? So, and you can run down the things. I think the greatness of your country is to be measured not by the ability to bomb the cities and villages and townships and countrysides of other people, destroying them, contaminating them, mangling them, demoralizing and shattering their societies. I don't think that makes you a great nation. Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany was able to do that. I never thought of Nazi Germany as a great nation. I thought of it as a evilly led and evil, propelled by evil. The greatness of a nation should be measured by the ability of a nation to provide a decent life for all its citizenry, by the viability and creativity of its institutions, by the equity and justice in its social arrangements. That's what real patriotism is about, and that's what my goal is. Unfortunately, as you know, Vinita, in our country, patriotism is very often associated with two very unfortunate and really destructive and really un-American things. One is racial superiority of a sort, you know. We're better than anybody else, and that's the way it is, and looking down on immigrants and such. And the other, with militarism. It's associated with militarism.
Growing up in this country, children learn that to be patriotic, they must, quote-unquote, support the troops. So my next question, leading right into what you're probably about to talk about, is the true nature of the U.S. military's presence throughout the planet. In your book, The Terrorism Trap, September 11th and Beyond, you point out that the United States military apparatus consists of over 500,000 troops who are stationed on some 400 bases in at least 35 countries.
Mm-hmm.
As well, you note that since World War II, the U.S. government has doled out more than $240 billion in direct military aid to more than 80 countries. And this buildup is justified to us, the American people, as necessary to safeguard us from terrorism, as well to protect the military's host countries from being attacked. So my question is, who are the beneficiaries of this massive U.S. military presence throughout the world?
Well, it is mostly a military presence to prevent social change in various countries. It's to make sure that in country after country in Latin America, Asia, and Africa, that the land, the labor, the natural resources, and the markets will be open completely to international corporate investors on terms that are completely favorable to the international corporate investors. And any country or any leader, whether it be Trujillo in Panama or Noriega in Panama or Saddam Hussein in Iraq or Milosevic in Yugoslavia or Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, any leader who tries an alternative path, who wants to take some other variant or independent path of self-development for his own people, that leader will be targeted and will be demonized and will be called a ruthless scoundrel. By the way, one of those leaders I mentioned is a ruthless scoundrel, and that's Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was CIA. He was put in Iraq to stop the Iraqi revolution, and he murdered the Kurdish Democratic Party, destroyed it. He murdered communists and progressives, and he even slaughtered the whole left wing of his own Ba'athist Party. And so he was the State Department and the White House's sweetheart. He was fine until he started doing economic nationalism and looking for a better deal on oil prices and then moving against Kuwait because of their slant drilling into his oil fields over the border, under the border. So that's when he suddenly was demonized as worse than Hitler, and that's when the U.S. began its decade-long war of attrition and horror against the Iraqi people. They suffered. They've suffered because of Saddam Hussein. So let's see. I'm trying to get back to what the original question was that you posed. Why the U.S. is pursuing this kind of world empire? Why does it need this global military apparatus? It is the leading country when it comes to making the world safe for the Fortune 500 and corporate capitalism. Those things, that's not what they tell the American people. They tell the American people, we got to protect you from communism, we got to protect you from this, that, and the other thing. And now, the terrorist attacks of September 11 were a golden opportunity. I mean, you and I look at that September 11 and see a horrible incident. They look at it and see a golden opportunity. I mean, it was just wonderful how it served their interest to escalate the military budget, roll back our civil liberties, give the internal security agencies a freer and freer hand to intrude and control. And all those powers given under the guise of fighting terrorism aren't fighting terrorism. All those powers are going to be used, for instance, this power of the FBI under the USA Patriot Act. The FBI now has the power to check any librarian in a library and see who is taking out what books where. That's going to be used against political dissenters. They're not doing a damn thing about terrorism. They still can't stop guns and explosives from getting through the airport checks. I don't know if you saw today's paper or yesterday's, which showed that, at least as reported in the San Francisco Chronicle, some 15 guns or 15% of the weapons they used dummy weapons got through undetected, and explosives got through undetected. I mean, the actual security measures, the security around our nuclear power plants is almost non-existent. If we've had private planes have flown back and forth over the power plants, and nobody scrambled to come up and challenge them or call them down or anything. So they're doing very little for real homeland security. They're doing really very little in hunting down the cells of perpetrators. Most of those arrests and such have been done by Interpol or European or Middle East police. What Bush has been interested in doing is waging a war in Afghanistan, which gives him hegemony over Afghanistan, allows him to station U.S. troops in various other surrounding countries, get their oil pipeline through, cut back on human services under the guise that this money is now needed for the war against terrorism, keep the country in a siege psychology. You heard what he said when it happened. He said, this is the first war of the 21st century. He announced it. He didn't say, let's hope this is the last war, or we mustn't have any war in the 21st century. He said, this is the first war. Yippee, with lots more to come. And he saw that when you send troops out and there's a crisis and there's a danger, then the people start treating the president the way they treat God. They start huddling around him and looking to him for leadership, guidance, and salvation. And he's fully aware of that. And his on September 10, his ratings were at a paltry 41% or so, or less than that. And on September 12, his ratings were 75, 80, 90%. But anyway, in a crisis, they all huddle around the leader and look to him for salvation. When the military is committed and there's a war, they rally around the president. The military commitment stirs up their patriotism, and they're waving flags. They got flags on their cars, they got flags in their windows, and they got flags like this is going to solve something. But that's fine. It's our flag, too. It's the American flag. Big deal. It doesn't mean that it's solving anything, and it's really answering to the issues of the day. He can get you to wave your flag and run around and salute and pledge allegiance under God or not under God, whoever, but that isn't going to protect us against terrorism, and that isn't going to of future terrorist attacks, and that isn't going to solve the immense problems of this country, nor does it solve the problems which the U.S. national security state has been creating around the world.
This is Raising Sand Radio host Susan Gallimore on KZSU Stanford FM 90.1, airing a segment from an interview with Dr. Michael Parente on Radio Free Santa Cruz's Rocking the Boat with host V-Man. Given the many conspiracy theories surrounding 9/11, V-Man asked Michael Parente who he thought was behind the 9/11 attacks.
They weren't behind the attacks in the sense that they didn't script these attacks and they didn't pay for and plan them. The truth is they had been funding the people who had been doing it. They gave Osama bin Laden license, isn't that right? They let him leave the country. He'd come in. He had been funded by the CIA years ago. The CIA had contacts with al-Qaeda. They knew something was up, let's put it this way. They did know that something was going to happen. Now that, my friend, is not a speculation. That's public record. They've said it. They've come out and admitted as much. Condoleezza Rice, she said, we knew that some planes would be hijacked, but we thought it would be a hostage situation. Now, I find that very interesting. We knew there's going to be a hijacking plane, and they were just sitting there. They even had a good idea who the people were. I mean, they had information that there was this group of young men from the Middle East all arriving around the same time looking for visas and enlisting, enrolling in aviation, what is that called, aviation school or flying school? For flying lessons. And showing no interest in how to take off or land, just wanted to learn how to fly. Excuse me, hello? So they knew and they didn't mind. And the reason they don't mind is because they know every time there's a terrorist attack, there's a real good terrorist attack that can hit on U.S. soil that would put the country right behind the White House, put them in step, and they could push their agenda. And that's exactly what they did. And on September 12th, the Wall Street Journal, as I pointed out in the terrorism trap, the Wall Street Journal instructed George Bush, said, this is a good time for you to be able to push through your tax cut for the very rich, roll back environmental controls, open up the Arctic for drilling for oil, and drastically increase military spending. The American taxpayer now ponies up $400 billion a year. I mean, that's more than all the other industrial countries put together spend on military spending. The second closest country is Russia with $51 billion. What is all that for? The Pentagon now admits that there's $1.2 trillion over the last 20 years that they cannot account for. Now, you don't misplace $1.2 trillion. Somebody's getting this money. Somebody's pocketing it, and it's getting siphoned off. So this is the kind of kleptocracy we have here, this kind of theft and corruption that's been going on really big time.
We mentioned a little bit earlier about the American flag, and I just was struck by the amount of symbols that we have here in this country to express our civic pride. We have, for example, fireworks on the 4th of July, Rockwell's famous portrait of Rosie the Riveter, Uncle Sam, and as you mentioned, the American flag. I'm struck, though, how many of our symbols that we have of our patriotism are linked with military conquest, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this topic.
Yes, a lot of patriotic symbols are war memorials, war symbols, that sort, statues of servicemen serving their country. I mean, are you really serving your country when you're killing villagers in Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos and Philippines and Afghanistan? Are you really serving your country? Is this serving your country? You know, patriotism is a... I already did at the beginning, I think, made that distinction between that brand of patriotism which defines itself in terms of military prowess and violence and war, and that brand of patriotism that defines itself and its strength in terms of the just and good life, which doesn't mean you have to be completely disarmed and indifferent to other people. But if the U.S. had been pursuing policies that were beneficial for the people of our own country, first of all, we wouldn't have a country where the military has $1 trillion they misplaced and never even got around to spending on the things they were supposed to spend it. And at the same time, have schools where the roofs are leaking and the water's coming through, and communities that don't have enough money for essential services, for shelters for the homeless, for daycares, for working women. You can go on. What we have is this immense private wealth and military glut and public poverty, so that the empire devours the resources of the republic in order that patricians may pursue their far-off plunder, in order that it can maintain this control. But that kind of control has really led other people to hate us. When the U.S. goes in and the CIA goes in and destroys democratic and popular movements in Turkey and Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan and Egypt and Yemen and Syria, I mean, reformist movements in Lebanon, and supports Israel in their attack on the West Bank and Palestinian community. That leads only to hatred of America and Americans. And even there, I think Osama bin Laden and others like him are wrong. You shouldn't hate America and Americans. America is an entity of 280 million people, widely diverse people. It's U.S. leaders who have been pursuing these kind of policies in our name, using our tax money to go off and make the world safe for the Fortune 500, make sure that no reform movements come up, that no strong indigenous organizations and institutions develop which can say, hey, wait a minute, we don't want General Motors in here. We want to use this land and these resources for ourselves, for our own people, you know? And it wouldn't hurt us. It would add to our prosperity if the rest of the world were prosperous too. They'd buy more from us. They'd have better things to sell to us. But it would cut drastically into the profits of those big corporations that depend on getting these natural resources for a song and using the cheap labor of these countries. That doesn't help the American economy, by the way. When you close factories in Ohio to go move to China or in Indonesia, where you can pay people 15 cents an hour instead of $15 an hour, that's not helping the American people. And they can make things so much cheaper over there, but that doesn't really lead to a cheaper commodity here. When Nike closed all its stateside factories and moved to Indonesia, where they were paying people 12 cents, children, young girls, 14-year-old girls, 12 cents an hour for Nike shoes, they didn't, and to make a pair of shoes with all the outsourcing and shipping all the material all the way over there, the labor was so cheap, it cost them about $7 for a pair of shoes. They didn't come back and sell it to us any cheaper. They're still selling those shoes for $150, $200, $90 a pair, whatever. They don't go and do all that to give you a better buy. They do all that to widen their margin of profit. So the American people are paying the cost of this empire in taxes, in the loss of jobs, in the incredible damage to their environment, the environment around the globe, because it's all one environment, and even the environment at home. The biggest single polluter of our environment at home is the U.S. military, which, by the way, is under no pollution restrictions or controls. Military nuclear plants are under no restrictions and controls the way civilian nuclear plants are, as inadequate as those restrictions are. So these are the hidden costs of this empire, which Americans really should be looking at. Just to wave the flag and wave the flag doesn't make you a patriot. You know, Jesus said in the Bible, he said, not everyone who saith, Lord, Lord, shall enter unto the kingdom of heaven. And I say here too, not everyone who starts chanting, USA, USA, is really a great patriot.
This is Susan Gallimore on Raising Sand Radio, KZSU Stanford, FM 90.1. If you're looking for genuine and delicious olive oil that is also not something you see or taste every day, contact the Rebuilding Alliance, rebuildingalliance.org, for olive oil from Palestine. Made from ancient olive trees that date back to Roman times and even before that, this unique organic oil can be shipped to you, or if you're local to the Stanford University Palo Alto area, drop by the Rebuilding Alliance at 235 Elma Street, just off downtown Palo Alto. You can call the Rebuilding Alliance at 650-325-4663, or again, you can go to the internet to order. That's rebuildingalliance.org. Or the phone number again, 650-325-4663. Now, let's return for the final segment on patriotism with Dr. Michael Parenti, who unfolded his thinking of the Pledge of Allegiance and on the separation of church and state.
Now, I was raised on the Pledge of Allegiance. We said, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I don't even know if getting kids to chant the Pledge of Allegiance like little parrots, if that really is a training for patriotism. I mean, there really should be a separation of church and state. That was intended by the founding fathers. They did not believe in any establishment of a religion. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law relating to establishment of religion. The whole issue is really just blown out of proportion to that degree. On the other hand, I don't believe in the glorification of religion. It's religious zealots who bombed the World Trade Center, who destroyed the World Trade Center and killed the people in those airplanes. Religions, the history of religions, has been a horrible history. Most people don't even know that history. The history of Christianity and the history of Islam and the history of Hinduism and even the history of Buddhism, which is supposedly the one peaceful religion. There are Buddhist armies fighting each other in Tibet for centuries. I mean, how do you think the Dalai Lama got all that wealth and all that land? It wasn't just sitting there with his prayer beads. Today you've got Buddhists fighting Christians from Nigeria to Sri Lanka. So the history of religions has been a history of murder and slaughter and mayhem and hatred and intolerance and vehemence. And I mean, the history of Christianity is just horrendous and horrible. We know little bits of it, but you've got to study it in more detail. Not just the Inquisition and all, it just went on and on from the very beginning, from the very first centuries, the fights of different Christians against each other, killing each other and whatever, the Manichaeans and this heresy and that heresy. So we can't separate religion from the things that are done in its name. And what's done in religion's name is some very beautiful, charitable, self-sacrificing things, helpful things, human, caring things, just things. And what's also done in religion's name is some brutal, horrible, murderous things, many. So this eagerness to marry religion with patriotism is just part of what we've been talking about. That particular brand of patriotism, that chanting, mindless, flag-waving patriotism, which goes out and says, let's kill them, and that particular brand of religion, which says, Lord, 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 under God, intolerant, holier than thou, both those things I just have no care for and no feel for at all. Well, when people say to me, well, if you don't like this country, why don't you leave? I say, well, this is my country. Don't tell me to leave. The American way is to help change and improve. If we had this attitude of never complain and accept everything they come down on us with, We wouldn't have any Social Security. We wouldn't have any public education. We wouldn't have any kind of environmental control, that as inadequate as they are. We wouldn't have anything. We'd all be working like in 1900 for 15 cents an hour. I mean, in 1900, the U.S. was a third world country, a half a century before the term was invented. Mass poverty, unemployment, typhoid and tuberculosis epidemics, the diseases of the poor, child labor, no labor unions to speak of, really, no public education or public health to really speak of, no job security, no nothing. It was a century of struggle. Those are the real patriots, the people who don't just love their country as a mindless abstract, but who love and care for the people in that country and want to see them treated justly. And treated justly means that we don't have to give the largest portion of our income in taxes so that the rich can keep siphoning off this money from the public treasure, and that we can use this money for the well-being of the people. That's a real patriotism.
A safer country, and it's in God we trust. So we'll bomb you during Ramadan, turn your world into dust. But pull up on your bootstraps, stand on your own two feet, as we blow them off with cluster bombs disguised as something to eat. We stand for freedom and prosperity, so we'll bomb your schools and hospitals, make sure you live in misery, and all you evildoers, and your children and your wives. With our B-52s, we'll show you how we value civilian lives. Give us your hungry, your restless, we'll show you democracy, a military trial and detention indefinitely. We'll have homeland security, Thomas Ridge, all hail. We may not find the terrorists, but we can throw the left in jail, and we will all be safe, and we shall have no fears. Once our retinas have been scanned and all the walls have ears, and we're all in good hands when the FBI is in the know. We're sure they'll look after us just like they did with COINTELPRO. So hang a flag in the window, all hail to the chief. Follow the leader and suspend your disbelief. Our country, right or wrong, you know what to do. Sing, God bless America, that red, white, and blue. When facing anyone with box cutters, we'll say put up your dukes, as we spend $50 billion on bombers and nukes. We're a beacon of light, and just to make the point, we'll cut taxes on the rich and throw the poor into the joint. And we'll bail out the airlines, get out your green fedoras, and for all you laid off workers, we've got maquiladoras. Yes, capitalism will save us. For have you ever seen a more convincing proof than Enron and Argentina? So hang a flag in the window, all hail to the chief. Follow the leader and suspend your disbelief. Our country, right or wrong, you know what to do. Sing, God bless America, that red, white, and blue. The axis of evil, we'll bomb them down to skids. There'll be no more terrorists once we kill their kids. People may starve and economies may crumble, but those folks will just have to learn to be more humble. And give us your money, debt repayments with aplomb, while we scour the map for a country left to bomb. And as another city falls on our sacred American soil, at least we've got our daisy cutters and that Alaskan oil. So hang a flag in the window, All hail to the chief. Follow the leader and suspend your disbelief. Our country, right or wrong, you know what to do. Sing, God bless America, that red, white, and blue.
Dave Rovics, Hang a Flag in Your Window. To underline what Michael Parente shared about how capitalism works in hand with militarism, several thousand people demonstrated in Vicenza, Italy, against expansion plans that would make the U.S. base, the U.S. military base, one of the largest in Europe. And more generally, they were protesting against the July 8th to 10th G8 of the world's richest nations. That's coming up this week. Police in riot gear fired tear gas at protesters to prevent them from crossing a bridge and moving closer to a controversial U.S. military base in the northeastern city of Vicenza. A group of demonstrators, some of them wearing motorcycle helmets and with their faces covered, threw bottles, rocks, and lit firecrackers as they were pushed back by security forces. Protesters were later allowed to continue their march, which broke up peacefully in the early evening. There were no reports of injuries. One of the protesters, Martina Vulgaggio, said, "We are sick of the powerful governing without consulting our people." The leaders of the United States, Japan, Germany, France, Britain, Italy, Canada, and Russia, together with those of major emerging economies, will hold talks in the central city of L'Aquila, focusing on the state of the world economy, financial regulation, climate change, trade, and development. Anti-capitalist protesters have planned a series of demonstrations at different sites, starting with the one in Vicenza, where locals oppose the doubling of the size of the base, which is home to 3,000 soldiers of the 173rd Airborne Brigade. Opponents contend the base poses a threat to groundwater, is dangerous for residents and for Vicenza's historical center, a treasure of Renaissance architecture. Around 1,000 police were deployed on Saturday, although Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi is keen to avoid a repeat of the violence that marred a 2001 G8 summit hosted by Italy and Genoa, when a protester was killed and scores of others were beaten up by the police. That is our show for today. As usual, all views are those of the host and guests and not KZSU or Stanford University. You can visit our website at raisingsandradio.org to download any of our other shows. You can also contact me directly at susan@raisingsandradio.org. Join us again next Monday from 2 to 3 Pacific time. And you can also listen to a live stream if you're out of the area. Details on the website, raisingsandradio.org.
I was born inside a hospital with a 9-digit number code. I pledged allegiance to the flag when I was only 4 years old. The first thing that I learned in school is we are a country free. One bad forces attack our land, I'll fight for my country. I'll fight for my country. I joined the Scouts when I was 12 and put on a uniform. I learned there how to fold the flag and how the look of a proud man was worn. We camped in the mountains, deserts and plains. We hiked through the giant trees. And I saw God in the beauty there. I'll fight for my country. I'll fight for my country. Thank you. night. The young man walks all alone. 6,000 miles away he finds, for the first time that he feels at home. And he laughs to himself as he faces his fear in the land of the mighty grizzly. It once was like this everywhere, I'll fight for my country. It once was like this everywhere, I'll fight for my country. Now I love this river, love this land, and I love my green mountain home. And when they come to cut the forest here, they won't be fighting me alone. 'Cause the wildlands are the places we go to remember what it means to be free. When bad forces attack our land, I'll fight for my country. I'll fight for my country. I'll fight for